Thank you for listening to the Impact Leaders Podcast, featuring leaders in sustainable and impact investment, sharing their stories, experiences, and advice to increase awareness and highlight best practices in order to help us transition more capital into the industry faster. I am grateful that you're choosing to invest your time to listen to our guests, since I know that you're going to feel encouraged and inspired. I am JP Dalman, founder and CEO of ILM Partners, and we're the proud sponsors of the podcast. ILM Partners is an advisory and soon-to-launch multi-asset management firm targeting to acquire and scale investment funds focused on sustainability and impact, one of the fastest-growing areas of investment management globally, enabling investors to generate returns with confidence whilst having a net positive impact in the world. Our mission is to facilitate and accelerate the transition of $5 billion of capital to sustainable impact investing in the next 5 years. If you would like to explore the opportunity of working together, email contact@ilmpartners.com for an introductory and confidential conversation. Your support means everything to us, since it's what really keeps us going. So make sure you share our work with someone that will benefit from it. Please remember to subscribe to get the notifications and check the notes from each episode. We hope you enjoy today's special conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Impact Leaders. I hope everyone is well, keeping healthy and safe, and very excited about today's episode, as we have one more special guest for our listeners, and this is Audrey Sellian. Hello, Audrey.
Very nice to be with you, JP. Thank you.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us today. And today you are outside of Geneva, yeah?
That's right.
Perfect. I'm very much looking forward to the conversation, because I was thinking today we'll be focusing on what I call real impact investing and kind of related subjects, and, you know, the real transition of capital into sustainable impact investing. So, you know, and we're going to be looking at some of the opportunities, some of the challenges, and obviously, you know, with your great experience, I know that listeners will get immense value and inspiration. So let me start by reading a short version of your bio for the benefit of the listeners. So Audrey Sellian currently serves, I like that word, as director of the Artha Initiative associated with Rianta Capital Zurich, and is a team member advisor of the Halloran Philanthropies, if I said it correctly. She has been active in impact investing sector since 2006 and is founder of arthaplatform.com, an online impact investment platform that is designed to tackle the economics of due diligence around high impact, small scale SMEs, SGBs. She has also been a wannabe techie since 1997. She completed her PhD in technology policy and development and has been thinking about how to intertwine the two ever since, and we'll come back, I guess, to the platform and how it was all put together. And she's very much passionate about bringing good people together, as I am as well, and providing that investment is good business is one of the keys to best serving the underserved on this planet. And I just was going to mention that Audrey has a background in management consulting from PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and her entrepreneurial experience includes several years spent in business development, marketing, and sales at an NSF-funded software startup called Wireless Grid Corporation. And then, give me one more second, I just want people to know that you serve as a trustee for several non-profit organizations, sit on boards of a number of for-profits, and the PhD that I mentioned before is from the Fletcher School of Tufts University, but you also hold a degree from London School of Economics and Wesley College. And you also have a doctoral fellow at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. So really, really nice all-round background, Audrey, right?
I don't know about all well-rounded, but it's been fun.
It's been fun. You know, a lot of things you have done across consulting, tech, you know, the different studies, and then, you know, many, many years now, if I count it correctly, since 06, right? So that's 15 years now in impact, right? So that will give you a very solid base, I guess, to help us tell us, and how do you define sustainable and impact investing?
Yeah, so JP, when we began, it was in 2006 at the behest of a family member of the Singh family. We were very much in kind of greenfield territory thinking about, well, what can we do differently about how our capital is deployed? What is needed? And what kinds of organizations are really going to be able to stand on their two feet after a couple of years of earnest support? It was just very basic questions that propelled us and me into this opportunity. It's been such an incredible learning opportunity for me. And today we are essentially defining this as positive businesses, businesses that by their very nature, by their scope of their product or service offerings, are serving underserved communities. And in so doing, attaining a stabilization in their models where they're able to effectively operate without massive subsidies after year, let's say 4, 5, 6. We're okay with companies, obviously, that need additional capital to grow, that need additional investment in capital expenditures to expand and so on. All of that, of course, is part of the up and down of the trajectory of any company. Mm-hmm. But in essence, we're looking for companies that will achieve functional and operational break even after a certain number of years of support. And their very heart and mission has to be, again, with the communities they serve. So those are broadly our parameters and our interests.
Excellent. So if we talk about kind of Artha Impact, and people that want to learn more can go to Artha, that's ArthaImpact.com. That's the website. And I wanted to read this because it says Artha Impact, the power of networks. So Artha is one of the four aims of human life in Indian philosophy. The word translates literally as meaning, sense, goal, purpose, or essence, depending on the context. So on that context, what can you tell us about, you mentioned the Singh family, what can you tell us about the history of how Artha was founded, perhaps, and then maybe we can talk a bit more about what it is today?
Thank you for that question. That's my favorite question, actually. I mean, I am where I am, and I've stayed where I've been entirely 15 years on the back of a solid sense of the values of the people I serve and of the true mission that they embody and that they live by. I just feel that, and the name has helped because I love the name so much. It's one of those pillars of Hindu philosophy, as you read. It's about the pursuit of prosperity on some level. It's about this idea that, I mean, even the most idealistic among us may tend toward, oh, you know, it's about universality, it's about social, it's about connectivity, etc. To be able to achieve any of these levels of spiritual and even intellectual enlightenment, there needs to be achievement of some level of material prosperity. Your belly has to be full in order for you to be able to be enlightened, I guess, is the fundamental starting point. And I think that reflects in our strategy and in the businesses that we want to support. It's about lifting up. It's about truly coming up with, you know, pathways for the real purpose of capital to be realized. The purpose of capital, it's a bridge between people. It's a bridge over time. It's a bridge across many dimensions, if you think about it. And we're trying to ensure that it yields to positive outcomes that transform the beneficiaries who are either in the client pools or in the service of or in the employ of the companies that we invest in.
That was wonderful. Thank you for that, Audrey. That's heartfelt, you know, and it's interesting, right? Sometimes just one name of your company or the fund, you know, can truly drive, you know, the beginning and every sense or every action that you take, right? And I do like talking about, actually, we need water first, even before we have food as well, but that's just a note aside. And I love that you mentioned the word serve again. But how did it happen then? So the way I understand it is Rianta Capital is the investing arm dedicated advisory to the Singh Family Trust, right?
Yes.
So maybe a bit more specifics, you know, for any, which is a family office, right? Single family office, as people may understand it. So I like sometimes pointing out that in the spectrum of capital, you know, where are we talking? So that other family office can get inspired. I always say, you know, if you are listening to this episode. So maybe if you can share how it happened that, it became that they said, okay, let's do this. And obviously, you know, I think we can jump straight. I know that in 2020, you're celebrating the consolidation of your efforts. So I know that it's a lot to talk, but maybe a bit of like what started it and maybe some key lessons perhaps, or one lesson, and then maybe we jump to 2020 COVID and today.
Yes, yes. Well, I think, JP, that, I mean, at the heart of every initiative, any new program, every new strategy is a moment of inspiration. It's the essence of intention. And it comes from, I think, in this case, it comes from a family who literally, I think, had a number of exercises to conclude on what is their statement of values. Who are they? What do they want to be known and remembered for? And what is their statement of wishes, not only for the current generation, but for future generations? And that exercise, I guess it may sound very obvious to some that, oh, well, we know what our values are and I know what I stand for. Everybody has a sense of that. But it's a different exercise when you take the time to put it in words. I have a good friend, Roberta Baskin, who's a journalist, who has always told me words matter. And I couldn't agree more with her. And I think that in this exercise of articulating what a family statement of intention and purpose is, that was probably part of the roots of the idea, as well as, and combined with, I think what's an intrinsic characteristic of the head of the family, in this case, Tom Singh. Tom is an extraordinary entrepreneur, an extraordinary leader, a father to incredible children, and a family member that's been so careful and thoughtful about, I think, everyone around him. This is somebody who I think intrinsically has always known that while charity is a nice to have, and of course, the family has been involved in charitable giving for decades, so that's not new. But in order for the needle to really move, in order for things to shift, there's got to be a more concerted kind of identification and pressure put on what are those acupuncture points in any structure, in any organization that's going to shift it to the point of being able to be resilient and self-sufficient. It's business acumen. And so as our principal, Tom Singh, has incredible business acumen and had essentially planted the seed for this initiative, it became what is today still just a program in name only under the umbrella of Rianta Capital. Artha Impact is not its own vehicle and entity. It's really just a program. And so we had the opportunity, and I had the opportunity, to help set the frame. And our team has grown. I have incredible colleagues. And our task is move the money, identify, you know, solid partners, entrepreneurs on the ground. We have such good relationships with so many of them, and they've been really longstanding. And also a little bit of free rein was given for us to determine how we can be catalytic. Okay, so we're effectively an advisory vehicle to a family office. What else can we do besides deploy our little bit? Because no single investor is going to move the needle on any one of the SDG issues alone. Never. And yet, the way we strategize, the way we conduct our business, the processes by which we actually discover, appraise, and execute transactions, it's often quite egocentric, I think, in the investment world. I mean, just across the board, private equity, venture capital. Of course, families tend to operate alone when it comes to setting their course. But I think what's the beauty of the discovery of this experience has been that there is an incredible network of the like-minded. There are kindred spirits. There are those willing to work together. This idea of trust, you know, being so elusive and difficult and taking years to form, I'm not sure that I buy into that anymore.
Yeah.
Because you know your kindred spirits when you see them and when you meet them. And when you establish credibility, obviously reputation and credibility are important factors here. There's absolutely a chance to work together in concert with others in a systematic way. And so we've had this opportunity. I'm waxing a little bit lyrical and philosophical here, but
I'm loving it.
It's been incredible. And it's just about being given the space to do this. And so as a result, Artha runs Impact for Breakfast. We have 15 chapters going on 17, about 2,500 people in different cities doing what we do, meeting, having cups of coffee and tea with our colleagues, sharing, learning, maybe mimicking, and hopefully the mechanics where the rubber hits the road is collaborating, co-investing. So I have great hope for the incredible networks that are out there already, people who are thinking the same. We're at a really interesting moment, I think, in terms of our collective approach, even as it may be small, to thinking about what our post-capitalist era is going to look like as a result of these actions and activities.
You know, you touched on so many great things there. And let me just comment on a couple, if I may, because you mentioned, well, the purpose of capital, first of all, I think it may actually be the title of this episode. I like that because the way that you define it was just beautiful. And then the statement of value that you mentioned as well, these statements of values and statements of value, let's put it that way, in terms of, you know, once you understand exactly what is it that you are about and what is it you're trying to change, and then that affects, you know, the actions that you take to create change. And I think that sometimes people just get lost as they pursue just returns without, you know, an underlying essence to it, to actually what is happening, you know, with the investment, with that capital that you are deploying. And one thing you mentioned about words matter, I just wanted to share this because I think it's for a reason. So I just stay at the Now Hotel in Amsterdam, and I loved it because on the pad on the side of the bed, they had a phrase, I think it's a Jewish phrase that says, we shouldn't count words, we should weight them. As in, because they're heavy, you know, they carry. So, you know, to Robert Baskin's that words matter, I thought that that would be very, very relevant. And then also, I'm just all coming, you know, to my mind because last night I was trying to learn about chi points in terms of the body, you know, where you can touch the body for energy to like heal your heart or heal parts of your body. And just came to my mind because of what you mentioned about Tom Singh. And also yesterday I finished the Impact Leaders Program West cohort with ladies that we had. You know, it was the first all women cohort that we did. And we were talking about how there are some things that may seem common sense, a bit like what you mentioned about the statement of value, but many, many, many people at every level, by the way, it's not just, you know, people in third world countries or less privileged. There are these key points, these key lessons, key learnings, you know, that people like Tom Singh have that we need to share, right? And share across all of us. Which brings me to the point about no single investor can move it because we have to all kind of work together and collaborate. So, yeah, a lot of great, great comments there. So thank you. Thank you so much for that. So now when you mention about the breakfast, the chapters, and you have, maybe it's a good segue into the platform, right? Arthur Networks and the platform. Is that how you manage connecting people? And I wanted to also ask you about maybe some of the sectors you focus on, but perhaps first about the network and the platform.
So the platform was born out of the experience of trying to discover investable opportunities on the ground in India. And it was really on the back of, after the first few years of traveling and starting to think that one could scratch the surface of a market and a nation as large as India, it was just this realization that, wow, you know, we are one small entity. We have a kind of capital to deploy that is valuable because it's playing in a field where few others play, including local banks and other providers of capital. The cost of that capital tends to be quite high. So, wow, we're one very active, enthusiastic player looking for these projects. Huh, there's probably two dozen. At that time, it was 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. Two or three dozen others who are doing exactly the same thing I am. Then those wonderful conferences, the industry convening started to happen. And this is not unique to us, to me, certainly to any player. Anyone who shows up in a country at the industry convenings and conferences is going to understand who's gravitating around the same topics. And then it was this realization that, oh, there are, it's not dozens. Oh, there are hundreds. There are so many others. Now, those of us who are external to the country, there's a very particular dynamic. Just as there's a dynamic that's very unique between kind of diasporans and their motherland, there's also a specific dynamic that applies to external capital, external investors looking in. Now, obviously, there's all kinds of very common narratives about, you know, oh, these are helicopter investors. They're dipping in and dipping out. Yeah. They're in and out. They're not really here. Fully understand that there's so much validity in all of that. But I realized, wow, sorry, I'm getting to the point.
Yeah, please.
We have pipelines. How many projects can I see in the span of a quarter or 2 quarters or a year? I can maybe look at and go and physically see 5, 8. And I realized, wow, I'm doing that work. But, you know, 6 other guys are doing the same thing, except they're flying business class and they're staying at, like, you know, the Taj or whatever to go and do their field work as I've had the opportunity to do. And then I started to simply realize that, well, I mean, that was the platforms are not new, but it's been, they've been particularly prolific in the last 2 decades. And we see why, because this information that is being captured and discovered by the very few is being kind of worked and iterated against and replicated dozens of times. The point where, you know, as a community of impact investors, we're probably spending $100,000 just trying to find, to discover something that we want to put $50,000 into. That kind of dynamic, that's very obvious. It's the disproportionate costs of due diligence and transaction costs for SMEs. We know all that. So we thought, let's put together something that helps us as a player in a network that can build trust with our peers. Let's list the things we see. Let's try to coordinate around some of the discovery. Mm-hmm. Let's share the notes, even if we're not going to do something. 19 times out of 20, we won't do an investment. Yeah. Let's try to share that information, make it more visible. And it's all about visibility. And the number of times that I found valuable information out on the back of serendipity, just I'm standing next to the right person in the line at the airport or at the buffet table at the conference or in the lobby reception or on a field trip, that's information about who's doing what and where should not be left to chance, because the opportunity costs are just too high in the event that things go wrong and things don't happen the right way. So the platform is a tool. We set it up for India. We thought it would be useful. Mostly people, I think, might refer to it for discovery, to be frank. But we have other workflows and templates built in. We have tender processes built in. And it's something that we've now, after having licensed it to the Inter-American Development Bank in 2012-13 for a Latin American version, that was a heavy deployment. Years have passed since then. And we realized we have something, it's a piece of kit that's useful. But just for capturing and lending coherence to some of this field-level data, let's make it cheap and accessible and light so lots of others can also white-label it, customize it. At the end, there's no winning platform that's going to come in and federate everyone else. I've seen at least one alpha male every year over the last 15 years appear and say that I'm going to build the platform that federates everything else and I'm going to own it all. And every one of them fail. And it's because in this world of development finance, impact finance, especially philanthropy, there's too much heart and soul at the end nodes. You have to be able to honor and proceed with a bit of humility and allowing those folks at the end nodes to customize, put their banners, paint their colors, wave their flags about their pipelines in the way that they want. Mm. And our goal is just simply to have kind of a connective tissue between them. So that's basically the point of the platform.
Amazing. Maybe it's a good opportunity to ask you a practical question there. So if people would like to white label and use the technology, how does it work? They have to reach out to you.
Well, it's arthanetworks.com. Okay. We have set up the vehicle for the SaaS tool licensing to happen through there. It will get to the point where we get to full automation, you know, walk your way through an online form and launch your system without necessarily human intervention. We're not quite there yet. So they do need to work with our team.
Yeah.
We launch beta tests.
Onboarding. Yeah.
We do an onboarding process. We launch a beta test. We do offer beta tests for free periods for 6 months. And then we work with groups that want to really flex and stretch their muscles and figure out how to become good curators online.
Fantastic. And just for context, what was the business that Tom Singh was on before or that is behind? Because I forgot to check that before. So,
of course.
For my own benefit, I guess.
Yeah, of course. So Tom and the Singh family have been the founders and the leaders of a retail business called New Look. a New Look is a well-known high street retail brand. It's one of the institutions of the UK high street, I think.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Okay, but that is good. That talks very good about me because I've been trying to, coming from investment banking, right, my DD obsession is huge. You know, I've been trying to do less DD these days, so my ignorance shows that.
No, no worries.
Which is okay, which is okay. So if we think about the areas that you're focusing on, and I like it because basically this is a dual now between kind of the impact investment arm, there's the platform. In terms of kind of moving into kind of what you're focusing on in terms of sectors, sizes of companies, you know, how much you're managing, those key points, that would be great. And then perhaps we can look at some examples if you want to share. I know if I looked at your website, you have 3 funds, then you have 21 investments highlighted on the portfolio tab in the website. And if I remember correctly, in total, you had about 25 million, was it, under management?
So, yeah, let me share a little bit on that. We actually probably have to update our website. We have a few investments we've exited and a few we've added, which aren't there. So a really key part of what we're doing is today a function of our partnership with a group called Mentera Ventures. Mentera is a fund vehicle that has spun out of Vilgro. And Vilgro, for those who've been involved in or know the space in South Asia, is one of the oldest enterprise incubators, social enterprise incubators in India, and is now spread out to a number of other countries. And so...
how do you spell the name?
It's Mentera, M-E-N-T-E-R-R-A.
Excellent.
And, I mean, what a team of seasoned professionals. We have Paul Basil, Mukesh Sharma, George Thomas, a number of other colleagues there who have helped us hone our, I think, sector and strategic focus. Now, we've done investments starting out primarily in areas that cross-cut with, you know, the theme of livelihoods in mind. So we did, in the early years in particular, a number of investments in energy, in agriculture, in water, etc. So we've had a little bit of experience there. We've shifted a little bit. I guess it's part of the inevitable journey of ticket size. We were really early stage and looking at very small tickets early on. I'd say we've graduated a little bit and moved up. So we're not just looking at, you know, 50,000, 100,000 tickets. We tend to now look at a couple of hundred grand to start, 200, 300, 400 grand to start. We are better equipped today to accompany the business over time. So to participate in, you know, future rounds, A rounds, B rounds, et cetera, we're trying to provide that level of support to some of these companies. A couple of these companies like Frontier Markets in Rajasthan and other states today have really flourished, I think. And we've been so excited and proud to see their evolution, knowing we played a little part in taking risk early on. Mentera now is kind of moved past its initial kind of test fund one. Now they're launching fund two, and we're looking at becoming a sizable cornerstone investor in their fund two. Their fund targets hover around about 80 million US, I think. The sectoral focuses include health, skills, and agriculture. So health and skills are relatively newer for us. We have a few investments in the last 5 or 6 years. So we've been learning a lot about those areas. And yeah, we continue to do our own directs. And this, you know, forthcoming prospective engagement in Mentera's Fund 2 is something we're very keen on. Yeah, so there's been a lot of progress and a lot of learning and the opportunity to work with, again, can't stress that enough, local partners who have really been able to help ground what we do and allow us to have the kind of post-investment management that we wouldn't otherwise, frankly, be able to manage in a portfolio this big from afar.
So that is effectively, you've also do direct investment, co-investment, and now this is a bit like a funds of funds, right? So Mentera is a, I just picked up the website quickly, mentera.com. So they are venture investment, right?
They are, I would call, you know, impact private equity investors.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And they really, I would say, you know, the differentiator, something that we've seen, and there's others in the market who we know also do a great job. They have the capacity to work with literally an idea and help that business move to a point where it's, you know, fully functional, well-governed, capable of reporting, etc. One of our favorite stories in a health company called Biosense, I mean, Mentera accompanied them from literally, I think, seed stage. And it's also a testament to the incredible entrepreneur in question who was running that business, really just a stand-up guy. And we invested alongside Mentera. They were providing essentially last-mile health diagnostic services and very interesting tech to accompany it, diagnostic tech another. We achieved an exit in under, I think, 3 years it was. Even when we were happy to stay for several more years, we didn't want to get out of business, but it was acquired.
Yeah.
And so there are some beautiful stories that I think really, you know, merit being told, and that really, I think, are testament to just what's going on at the early stage, particularly in health and particularly in a country like India.
Yeah. Yeah. No, fantastic. And again, regionally, basically, the focus is all India, right? Aside from
yes.
how you then go into LATAM through IBD and the SaaS service, etc., right? And then I picked up from, you know, your portfolio description, kind of the challenges, the kind of that you are focusing on, kind of rural distribution, sustainability in supply chains, after sales services, end user finance, and human resource management. But one thing I thought about is that, you know, in 15 years, have you seen one challenge developing or growing more than other? You know, something that you may say, I think JP and anyone wanting to start looking to invest may want to focus on in terms of like, this is a growing problem or a growing opportunity, of course.
Yeah, such a good question, JP. It's a tough one.
I just came up with that one.
That's really good. I have to say, I think...
Because I could ask you, you know, so to give you time to think, yeah. You know, I could ask you, obviously, you know, what has worked for you or what it didn't work for you as well. But that's something that has come to my mind because I was very lucky the other day. I want to touch when we talk about the future of the investment, but I was very lucky to go invited to the ILIA investment dinner,
yes.
Right? And they had a couple of companies, investees presenting. Right?
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have been a surprise, but it was a bit of a shock to listen to what happened to all of them through COVID and
yeah.
how they had to pivot and, you know, the challenges. And it just made me think, you know, obviously we have massive problems with, let's say in this case, you know, I'm promoting a bit more on water because, you know, people are not picking up as much. Obviously, food distribution. Obviously, we know that most of poverty is in the rural areas and is related to farmers. So we know all of those. But yes, I don't know. I just thought that, you know, personally, perhaps, you know, you have a one that you thought you have been thinking about.
Yes, actually. Absolutely. So it's funny, you know, there are so many players who are attempting to invest in models that are going to make life better for the end users. We're ultimately, I think, all motivated to help play a small role in generating better human well-being outcomes. We want people to live better. We want people to have access to, you know, all kinds of things. It could be education and health and agricultural inputs and waste management and all these different elements, clean water. So I think the biggest challenge, and it's funny, it's a bit ironic because it's reflected both in the portfolios and the pipelines that all of us are working on as a collective, but it's also, you know, in our own behaviors. As a highly fragmented ecosystem of players, all well-intentioned, all, I don't know, I mean, it reminds me of the song, the Chris Rea song about, I think it's called The Road to Hell and all of that.
Okay.
What are we doing? We're trying to facilitate last mile service and models that help make things better for people. All of us are doing this. So we may have 20, 25, 30 companies that do this in various forms, and there's 50 others who have at least 5 to 10 companies each that are all doing the same thing. Now, even within our own portfolio, there isn't direct overlap on a frequent basis, but there are a number of companies who are trying to deliver potable drinking water, access to, you know, particularly helpful renewable energy, you know, products, solutions, solar powered TVs, Fox lights, torches, all kinds of stuff. Everybody's trying to crack that proverbial last mile with these products and services that are ideally well-positioned, you know, robust, well-priced. At the same time, for anyone who's actually gone and done some of the field trips, it was always so shocking to me to get to like what I perceived with my Western eye from my foreign eye as I feel like, wow, we've reached the end of the road. We've taken two flights. We've driven for 10 hours. We're really in a pretty rural area. And we're trying to get XYZ service and product out here. And if you look on the billboard of any village in India, the telco is already there. And so is beer. Like you see alcohol advertisements, you see telcos. There's obviously folks who've cracked this and who do this really well. So what are we doing here? It's a question that I always have to ask myself. And then I think we can't really get even three companies in our portfolio to necessarily figure out how to piggyback on each other's distribution channels, very hard won distribution channels, and get them to potentially share secret sauce about product mix, about pricing, about inventory management, maybe about end user finance. And that's because we're not greasing the wheels. If we put the kind of money up that would grease the wheels for collaborative action, for convergence to occur, for efficiencies to be realized, so that not only does this supply chain and distribution channel serve people with clean water, it also may bring them an excellent energy product or two, or a particular set of apps or skills that, you know, young people in those families could benefit from, or sanitary napkins that are biodegradable. We have all of these products in our portfolios. Getting it out there and figuring out how to grease the wheels is a huge challenge that we still haven't been able to crack. But I realize it's because we're not putting forward, and it's not, I don't think, the role of one investor. It's the role of the collective body of investors to say, if we're going to crack this nut, we want to do last mile anything and solve SDG X, we have to be able to put collaboration money out there. In the same way that the largest institutions, the big banks, the development banks, the big conveners, have to do the same to get us as investors to collaborate. Why are we all undertaking the same transaction costs in being able to have deal discovery possible? Everybody is working and doing hundreds of bilateral conversations all the time, concurrent, with hundreds of different solution providers all the time. And we're all trying to solve the same problem. It's as if, you know, the gun's gone off. We don't know where the finish line is. We have no idea how to get there. So the collaboration on our side is also lacking.
Lacking. Yes. So two things that came to my mind, right? Well, one was when you said to make life better, it always plays in my mind as I think I'm coming to realize, you know, how little we really need. But then at the same time, we do have still this culture of, you know, growth and materialism. And then you mentioned before, which is a challenge that I have, a question that I ask all the time about this helicopter approach of, you know, Western or European investors coming into, you know, different regions, you know, Africa and LATAM as well. So what does really, you know, a better life mean? That's the question that I keep pondering, you know, a lot recently, aside from the basics, right? Like you say, water, waste management, etc. And then, so when you mention about the fact that when you go there, you know, telecoms is everywhere, and then beer. So, and they cracked it. I missed the link. So that one was about learning from them, working with them. What was the
reflection? So I didn't make it very clear. I think I was a bit too long-winded there.
Oh, no. I was good, but I just kind of like, I just lost it, I think.
I think it's just this idea that someone somewhere is doing it. We may not have visibility as a community of a small community of impact investors, but the answers are there and they lie in each other. There's not one silver bullet that I'm going to bring that's going to solve any problem. And likewise for the others. I think this issue is there is not really the space or the narrative created in the way that we all function as private equity investors or VCs or impact or even impact investors, where it should be our responsibility as not as a solo actor, as a community, as a collective, to figure out what these lines are, how these things work. Because there's a lot that's hidden that we don't see, of course. It's complex, very complex environments, very difficult operating environments. And this idea that some of the narrative must change. Mm-hmm. And in order for that to change, there has to be a big pot, I think, rather than, you know, one big fund of funds coming out again to continue to propagate the same exact mentality that's contributing to hundreds of parallel silos, a big pot of, you know, grease in the wheels. I don't know what you'd call it. Transaction costs, slush fund, collaboration, incentive, kickers. Yeah. I don't know what you call it, but something to get people to see a carrot that changes some of this behavior where we're all competing against each other to develop on SDG X, whatever it is.
Okay, let me come back to that one. Just as we talk, you know, about the different options, but just before we move on, I just wanted to quickly ask you about the Artha Venture Challenge, if you wanted to share with us.
Oh, thank you for that. The challenge has evolved quite a bit. It was just essentially a program that we put in place to help to fuel activity on the platform we had built. Mm-hmm. That was the initial idea. The idea itself was one that we actually copied from the
big competition to attract applicants.
Basically.
So that you can populate. Okay, yeah.
Basically, but we copied it from the big venture challenge in the UK that was running a program under the umbrella of Unlimited. Mm-hmm. We, with their blessing, we kind of made it an Indian version, and it just went like this. We said, we have a certain pot of capital to deploy. We'll put out this challenge and see who's applying. We'll pick a few finalists, 10 to 15 of them. We'll work with them for anywhere. We started with saying 9 months. We'll work with them for 9 months. And having worked with them and helped them get ready, we'll introduce them to our networks. Any other investor that steps forward with any kind of money, debt, equity, or grant, will match. And we had levels where we could match. It wasn't huge, but it was in Indian currency, 30 lakh, 60 lakh. At that time, it was between $50,000 and $100,000. And it was a way of getting systematic co-investment going. And we did this for about 5 years actively. We've made a more latent version now, simply because we realized, oh, this is another activity that's replicating a dynamic that's going on. There are hundreds of challenges going on in a country like India. In some countries, if there may be fewer, we thought, that's a lot of effort we're putting in and getting, you know, whatever, 100, 300 applicants, whatever it was, going through an intensive period and then spending time just on those 8, 10, whatever. But we realized that the costs of running such a program, I'm not sure, you know, that was the most efficient way to do it. And so we now have the Artha Entrepreneur Discovery Challenge, where we simply say to people, okay, update your profile on our system. And if it looks like there's something compelling, we'll pick a few finalists. We'll just let you do your pitch, do your presentation to as many as investors as we can get on the line during COVID. So that's what we've been doing recently.
And that one is called the Entrepreneur Challenge, right?
The Entrepreneur Discovery Challenge. Yeah.
Okay. And then the point to highlight there, which I think you mentioned, is that this is just, rather than kind of open deadline close, is open, fluid, apply all time.
Yes.
Rolling through the year.
That's right. We do have to do a little call out to let people know.
Yeah.
But we keep doing it through the year.
Fantastic. Well, we'll put the link to the application as well on the notes so people can have a look. So now, you know, we talked a lot about the history, you know, some of the partners you're working with, you know, the challenge, you know, some of the investments. Maybe we can talk about identifying and measuring impact. Is there any particular methodology that you use or that you prefer, or any, again, always lessons, you know, welcome?
Yeah,
that's
a million-dollar question.
Yeah.
So for a number of years, we did not have particular adherence to one or another dominant standard or methodology. I mean, there's been a bit of an arms race underway around this topic. At the moment, we've settled on broadly something we're actually doing now in real time, bringing our interface on the Artha Impact platform to general compliance with the IMP methodology, just because it's simple and clean. And we do have now kind of a series of our own homemade filters that we apply when we first are introduced to an opportunity, when we first discover an opportunity. What are the first set of questions we ask? And then how is that actually brought through, importantly, not just through due diligence, but post-transaction, post-investment? How do we keep on ensuring that we're still broadly getting the information we seek on those impact metrics? Of course, there's the taxonomies, the dominant taxonomies like IRIS, et cetera, that people can use. Now, we're just trying to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to just encourage folks that we are working with, pick two, three things that are really tangible and possible to measure. There may be more analysis and extrapolation required on some of these, but we realistically want to understand quarter by quarter, or at least annually, what's the outcome? What's the delta from the point of intervention and from the point of baseline? What has changed? And so that's the essence of it. And I think most of the industry, I think, is now at a better place. The tools have improved, the methodologies. There's so many tools out there that are focusing on the feedback loop from beneficiaries. That's another really critical component of this that I'm just getting educated upon with the help of our colleagues at Mentera. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at on the impact measurement side.
Yeah, perfect. And one thing I picked up from some of the notes that I had above was that is written, we know that if we're going to solve for any SDG, and you mentioned a couple of times SDGX, the reduction of transaction cost and amplification of good solutions is key, right? Which is a nice segue into the future, because you mentioned it a couple of times, right? The cost sometimes of this is what kills everything and obviously reduces the return. But one, and just moving maybe from measuring, I've never seen anyone really measuring the cost reduction as we become more efficient. That's the one idea that I'm going to put there as an inception to anyone that is thinking about it as well, right? Because if we talk now about the future and scaling, the question that I was going to mention, I was going to ask was about this. So what is the solution? You know, venture impact philanthropy, Mentera, Arta, pure PE, you know, blended, depending on who I talk to, you know, in the podcast or privately, people have very strong views about, you know, what works, what doesn't work. You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, they were thinking, oh, you know, private equity model, you know, on itself doesn't work. That really what works best is, you know, potentially, you know, venture philanthropy or venture impact, sorry, philanthropy, just to be more specific, where I've seen, you know, some of the ideas about blended finance. Actually, when I look at it, you know, it sounds like the most sensible thing. But anyway, I talk too much now. Or other asset classes, right? So what's your view, Audrey?
I think everything you're saying, these are very valuable observations. I mean, I think we've had this really rough couple of years, right, with COVID. And I think that that's actually contributed to a potential shift in what it is that we expect of ourselves and of each other as we do this type of work. And there was a really good GIN report that was published sometime kind of mid-pandemic, I think last summer in July or August. And a couple of things jumped out. And I have to say, they were quite comforting validation of the approach that we'd been taking with trying to build the tools to support managing these kinds of costs. We realized with the COVID context, JP, and I'm branching off into this because I think it really still informs our current reality right now. The vast majority of us as investors found ourselves unable to travel anywhere, to go and do anything. And so that cramps your style when you're about to meet prospective investees. You can't engage and assess risk. You can't really understand what's going on. And so I think there was like more than 75% of our industry reported that, wow, that's a big notable shift. And thereon, I guess the key was, well, what do we do about it? What strategies maybe may we be willing to use? And suddenly we had 40% of those investors that reported in the GIN survey expressing willingness to utilize other investors' due diligence documentation. And that's just a sea change. Over 40% willing to share due diligence costs, participating actively, I think altogether, either folks that already tried or were willing to try, like more than, I think, 55, 60% were ready to participate in syndication efforts, whereas maybe before they weren't. And so I think some of the things that are going to inform how we continue to do this work and think about SDGX, whatever that is, COVID may have propelled us and brought us to kind of a different operating reality where we just might be able to utilize technology and figure out how to scale trust with each other in a way that actually allows for collective action in a proper way. I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question, but.
So I was just double checking that. I think that's the Gene Report 2020 that you referred to, right?
This yes.
Last year, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
My favorite one. It's got a yellow cover.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll share that as well. And yeah, I think what I'm picking up from that is kind of the future, which is very much, you know, what I endorse and promote is, you know, the partnership and collaboration, right? Now, what does it look like? And not to promote your platform here, but basically is, you know, I'm just saying it's platforms that are less alpha male driven and more true connectivity driven, right? And it's actually, I loved that as well that you mentioned that, because I was invited and participant to a conversation around, you know, creating the potential to create the kind of a DeFi blockchain based kind of impact investment platform. You know, it sounds all fantastic and great, but
yeah,
it always goes back to, okay, what is the real purpose of this and why are you trying to create it? Yeah, I can't remember if you mentioned the phrase dominate the world, but, you know, if it is just to kind of go and effectively do it for that reason rather than for the actual reason of bringing people together to collaborate, to find the best practice, the best way to find the solutions and to fund, you know, to solve the problems and, you know, fund the solution for the problems, right? I think that's where sometimes, especially as investors, we get caught up between, naturally, I tend to see this again and again, you know, people come to me with the impact banner, but as soon as we are in a room, it tends to go back to the money. So, I don't know, I hope that makes sense, you know, what I just said.
Because no, it does.
Kind of the survey is kind of, again, you know, the survey is, oh, yeah, we're willing to collaborate, to do this, to... That is, we don't serve. You have seen surveys in your career. I have, you know, seen internally, externally. Intention is one thing. And going back to the statement of value versus action versus then consistent behavior in terms of, you know, where are you really trying to do, right? And not losing that north, you know, and that essence.
I mean, I think you're putting your finger right on the heart of the issue.
Yeah.
It's the pulse. It's this issue of, yes, I think intellectually and on many levels, a lot of us are intrigued and excited to think about, well, what is this interface and interaction between, is it, you know, information commons and, you know, DeFi? How does that apply to islands of data and, you know, potential collaborative models? Ultimately, it comes down to a question, one question. What's in it for every player involved? What's the trade? And until we're able to solve that question, answer that question, and I don't have all the answers by any stretch.
I forgot the techie was there. Yeah, I touched a nerve, yeah.
No, but it's just this issue of every important juncture of human history from, you know, shifts. I remember reading the stuff of Mansur Olson at the time talking about moving from feudal systems into, you know, market economy and moving from mercantilism to other types of political economic models. It's because there's something that clicks, and it's usually something about enlightened self-interest. Now, every player has a lot to contribute here. Technology is amplifying what each and every one of us can do. And that's why Federation and King of the Hill strategies, domination strategies, aren't going to work today. There's too much empowerment at the end nodes that's, you know, propelled by technology, which means there has to be some sort of a viable unit of value that's exchanged and that enables rewards in exchange for the data, in exchange for access to X, Y, and Z. There may be hundreds of propagated broker-dealer models out there, every regulator's nightmare. But I think those are the problems we're going to have to come into solving at some point in order for liquidity to actually be a reality for solving SDG problems. And so, I mean, that's more questions than answers.
I hear you. Anyway, I felt like I had to say, so basically I've learned that if we have two lines here, if people cannot see, but I had two lines on your wrist, on the back of your wrist, and if you put the fingers there, just after the finger, and you press there, that is the chi to the heart, you know, because it's not just the pulse, you know, anyway. But people that watch the video will see me. So as we starting to come to the end, I didn't want to go without asking you, and I know that you have a whole life doing this, but anything that you can share about yourself and, you know, what happened that kind of from all those degrees, management consulting and PwC, and then, you know, this, and then you mentioned obviously the people that you serve and the purpose, you know, of Arthur being the purpose. But anything that you can share for people that either are trying to, or they are in the middle of this, trying to get into impact, or trying to, or they are in the middle of this and trying to work it out, any wisdom that you can share with us?
I don't know if I have much wisdom to share.
You share a lot already, actually.
I've been very lucky to land in certain circles and to befriend people who I've learned so much from. I would just, I guess, emphasize and reemphasize that being able to be effective in this domain, and for me, it's a very broad domain. It's anything and everything that we can do to attribute purpose to capital, purpose to money. And by the way, that's a book that a friend of mine called Jed Emerson has written, The Purpose of Capital. Anything that any of us are doing as a community to clarify and imbue, like, what is this all about? Our short journey on earth, like, what's the purpose? I think puts us all into the same tribe of people. And I'd emphasize that my point earlier was, it's not about pedigrees. It's not about degrees. You don't need any of this. You don't need any, you know, we tend to cluster together in sort of, you know, tribes of people that kind of have similar orientations. But mm-hmm. I think the dominant characteristic is not, it shouldn't be about anything other than just mission. And you can recognize mission in another person when you meet him or her. It may not always rise to the surface so quickly, but you know when it's there. And I just think there's a certain, I don't know, we have to create more opportunities and more space for those with great ideas, and especially the entrepreneurs, the social entrepreneurs, especially those operating in tough operating environments on the ground, to be able to manifest their visions and their will and their dreams. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, we're slowly transcending this narrative that, oh, we work in a little bubble and, you know, the rest of the world and the traditional financial markets operate this way and we're just mm-hmm. a little drop in the ocean. Mm-hmm. I think we have to shift out of that mindset and all of us begin to appreciate that this is about a shift of the consciousness of humanity. It's not just a little movement and it's not just a bunch of self-serving, you know, institutions who just want to propagate, you know, golden cage packages for, you know, their employees. It's not much more than that. And I've had this incredible opportunity to work with a friend of mine, Professor David Cooper-Ryder, in the past 2 years. And my roots were in academia, so I've always just loved to have links associated to universities, and had this incredible opportunity to co-edit a volume called The Business of Building a Better World. And it's just about inputs. It's just other people contributing what they know and what they've experienced about the power of positive business, the shift mindset, and the, you know, the anomaly, the quote unquote anomaly of bringing your heart and love into what constitutes your everyday, your professionalism, your business and your work. And so I really believe in the movement that we are part of. I believe that it is going to be perpetuated and it's going to grow as more space is created. And as like the narrative is democratized and people are able to access and see what else is going on. So I don't know if I answered your point or raised the right idea.
I think you answered in your own way, which was fantastic again, in terms of what you realize is so important right now. And quite a few things resonate. I meant to mention it before. You talk about the mission. By now, you know, may have picked up on my mission of trying to help, you know, share this knowledge, you know, to help accelerate the transition of the capital. There is so many parts to it, which, you know, luckily we kind of brought up quite a few today. The Impact Leaders Program that I mentioned before, which I haven't told you too much about, you know, the whole point, interesting enough, I talk about trust acceleration, you know, because that's what we need. And you mentioned it, I don't know, an hour ago, about trust and how trust is, you know, takes time to build, but we need to really build it much, much faster now, and it's easier. And I'm going to segue into when you realize the mindset, the consciousness, who you're talking to, you know, more deeply, right? Yeah. And the fact that you mentioned conscious of humanity, I don't know if you listen to it, but I highly recommend you listen to the episode with James Arby, because I don't know if you know James, but you know, with Rethink X, they talk about humanity 3.0, and we were talking about consciousness, which is interesting enough that you bring it up again, which not many people talk about, and the importance of what does that mean, you know? And then some people said that people that talk about it actually are the ones that know least about it, which is another point. But anyway, that's for another conversation. That's another conversation. But the importance, and I love that connection versus that challenge, you know, to connecting between the two worlds, you know, let's call it inverted commas, traditional world into one side of the spectrum of capital, I would put it,
yeah,
you know, with the big organizations. I keep going on about this. There's no point to have, you know, whatever rewards you're going to have unless we have a world to live in and to enjoy the rewards, yeah, you know. So, and then one last thing, I just take opportunity, non-connected, but because you mentioned academia, just a live congratulations to my friend Vanina Farber. She just got appointed dean of the IMD. So, I think that's amazing. You know, it's a sister from Argentina, sister from another mother. So I'm very proud and happy about that. Last questions. You know, you met so many people. You work with Tom Singh, you know, all the different people you've seen in the different companies. What is an impact leader that you have observed? What is it that makes a leader to be an impact leader, to have that impact that you have seen people have?
Oh, that's such a good question. I've said it a couple of times now. I've had the privilege to see a couple in action. And for me, their dominant characteristics, it's a combination of irreverence, fearlessness, and humility that really makes them true and stand out. I think irreverence in the face of bureaucracy, like crippling process and administrative bureaucracy that's bogging down so much of the work of what could potentially be our best suited institutions to promote collective action. Fearlessness to speak what people don't want to speak about and to call out the elephants in the room. To be that, I love that image of the little girl, you know, in Wall Street facing the bull, you know, to be that.
Yeah.
And humility to realize that ain't no single organization gonna solve the problem. It's all of us. None of us is as smart as all of us. I have seen that quote floating around for years. It resonates a lot.
Can you repeat that one?
None of us is as smart as all of us.
Okay.
So I think that humility is also really, I mean, you see it when it's not there. And I guess with all of us in this type of work over decades, I guess as we get older and older, we'll probably get less and less patient with folks who aren't able to demonstrate that they realize their place, which cog and which wheel they are in the system. It's just realizing it's a system. And so,
Brilliant. On that note, any call to action for the listeners that you want to ask for?
Well, I think for those who are willing to dip a toe in the waters and get engaged in transactions and impact deal flow and in whatever country, in whatever sector, I would just say there's a lot of really like easy to find touch points and a lot of really open, willing people, you know, happy to share information. So, you know, find your local impact hub if that's something that, you know, you want that interests you. If you're interested in India, for example, we share a lot of information. Happy to do that.
Yeah.
Join a network. There's so many wonderful networks out there. Some of them are at cost with membership fees. But if you don't want to do that, you can come to our free breakfasts in whatever city. If you don't have breakfast in your city, start one. And then it's yours.
Yeah.
And you can be a convening point for your kindred spirits, the people that you know share your values. I think it's not everybody's cup of tea to run stuff and be super activated.
Yeah.
But there are different levels of engagement. And I would just say, if you don't know where to start, ask JP. That's my call to action.
Thank you. So support, join, or start. That's what I picked up. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Audrey. Really appreciate
fun.
It. That was really beautiful, you know. So build your heart. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend now, right?
Thank you.
So much appreciated. And that's it. that's it for now, for us, for now. So before I go, I just want to take this opportunity to invite you to partner with me, Impact Leaders and ILM Partners. We want to help and do more to raise awareness and create action. As you know, the podcast is one of the catalytic initiatives to help deliver on our mission to raise awareness and help transition of capital into sustainable impact investing faster and at scale. On the note, actually, that you just mentioned, if you guys want to join a network, you know, we are launching a new cohort or group of the Impact Leaders. So if you want to apply, have a call with me. There is a link everywhere you find me on LinkedIn or on the notes of the episode. And then you can also contact us directly at ilmpartners.com. So it is bye for now and until our next episode of Impact Leaders. And God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Impact Leaders. Impact Leaders is brought to you by ILA and Partners. Please connect with us to work together in the transition of capital into sustainable and impact investing.